Ladies and gentlemen, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network. Thank you so much, Global Star, for carrying our program. Thanks for your belief and your trust in us, folks, as we walk through this minefield of current events together. You know, past is prologue, isn't it? A lot of what we're seeing today, well, isn't that what we've seen or what the history books don't tell us? But our guests, Steve Quayle, Tom Horn, do. I don't know how many people know this. We've been talking about this. We've been promoting this. The seminal works of Tom Horn and Steve Quayle are now manifest in a book titled Unearthing the Lost World of the Cloud Eaters, compelling evidence of the incursion of giants, their extraordinary technology, and imminent return. Some people might hear that and say, oh, man. Put the crack pipe down, walk back a few steps, and reconfigure yourselves. But the evidence, in my view anyway, the evidence is indeed present. Biblical, historical accounts, and I can't think of two better people to lay all of this out than our guests Steve Quayle and Tom Horn. Now, Jackie, you're manning the boards. Do we have Steve and Tom on? Do we? All right. Steve, I'm going to pop it over to you. Welcome, my friend Steve Quayle from stevequayle.com. Steve?
Thank you. I didn't know if you were going to introduce Tom to it, the same thing, but...
I'll let you introduce him.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll introduce him when I get through this rather two-hour introduction. No, I'm just kidding. The fascinating events that are taking place in the world of archaeology, cosmology, everything that's going on now has been recorded in the ancient past. And unearthing the lost world of the Cloud Eaters, let me explain something. Cloud Eaters was the name given to us by Cliff Mahudi, who's a Zuni elder, when I asked him point blank, what do you call the giants? Now, in the Special Forces community, they call them long walkers. But Cloud Eaters simply means if you're like a six-foot guy looking up at an 18-foot giant, you're going to see literally on a cloudy day, it's going to look like his head is in the cloud. And why they call them eaters is because, gee, what we're going to talk about tonight is the fact that cannibalism has come full forward now, full circle, with even some of the lead scientists saying it's a good way to increase the protein source on Earth. I think they're probably having dinner on, human remains or something, because, and I'm not kidding, what is intrinsic and important, and I guess the better word would be inherent in our discussion tonight, is when Tom first broke on the show, Doug, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, the gates of hell being opened, the idea was that literally a gate held something back or allowed something through. So the events that are taking place now, everything that's disgusting, everything that's perverted, everything that is absolutely like the times of old are coming back into our knowledge. And it's critical that people understand that the evidence, the incursion of giants in history is undeniable. The references in ancient writings are undeniable. The standards of which courts base evidence and base findings is undeniable. It was Orwell that said they who control the past basically determine the future. The reason why this is so critical at this time in venture, in our, let's just say this, progression downward, is because Jesus specifically said in the days, the last days, if the days weren't shortened for the elect's sake, the elect are those who believe in him, that there'd be no flesh left alive. And it's funny now that even as people will argue with that, the biggest theme and meme now coming out of Hollywood and even on television, or rightly named Devil Vision, is the idea of cannibalism. So when Tom and I put this book together, The Lost World of the Cloud Eaters, I pretty much dealt with the civilization of angels. A lot of people have a misunderstanding of angels. A lot of people have a hard time to reference angels. The idea that we're dealing with pre-flood or antediluvian and a pre-judgment period that some people call pre-Adam, some people call prior chaos. The point is that what we've done in this book, all 505 pages, is take it from the beginning of the beginning. Now, Genesis, it talks about the world being in a state of chaos without form and void. And those words are tohu and bohu. But in the book of Isaiah, it said that God did not create the earth void. So where is this dichotomy? Is this a contradiction? Not at all. Because the angelic civilizations that even the Sumerian Table of Kings goes back almost a quarter of a million years, there's a difference in the size and reign of the king. Some of these guys reign 36,000 years, and everybody tries to put it into the understanding that, oh, well, gee, this is a misplaced decimal system, etc., etc. But what most scholars will not deal with or touch is that in all the different Babylonian, Assyrian, Assyro-Babylonian, and all the myths, legends that came forth after the plains of Shinar and Nimrod's attempt to build a tower who reached into heaven, which was nothing more than a gate. Before Genesis, the book of Genesis speaks specifically that God divided the continents, if you will, in the days of Peleg. All of these things are focusing on what we're going to talk about and what we deal with in our book. The catastrophic nature of what happened to the planet Rahab. I think what most people are going to get from this book, Doug, is the fact that from the beginning to the end, Jesus told us what it was going to be like. There are ancillary accounts, but the New Testament and the Old Testament, and the New Testament refers to this time period, that they're very concise in what's going on. You cannot escape that there's a war going on. We see wars on earth as a reflection of wars in heaven. We see, obviously, the serpent which stood erect in the Garden of Eden until God cursed it to crawl on its belly is even the name of the United States, if you will, the Americas, Amaruca, land of the plumed serpent. When Tom and I were in the desert southwest, they described the entities that came through the gates that they currently open today. And for the record, if everybody wants to see, and look, it's not like this Stargate series, but a photographer friend of mine who was down the Grand Canyon, interestingly enough, a couple weeks ago, took the picture of a 13-foot tall, hollowed out, not a cave, but almost like a, if you will, a pear shape, not a pear shape, but I guess you'd say almost an oblong indentation or added in the side with a piece of wood stump there that evidently somebody goes to communicate with spirits. So where this leads and where this started, literally we've been all over the desert southwest. Tom and I are mutual film teams, film crews. We've joined together our talents, and while we've been on parallel tracks for pretty close to 20 years, it seems like the Lord in His mercy is bringing this stuff together. Now, people ask me, why do you guys focus on this? Why don't you deal with just winning souls? Why don't you deal with this, that, and the other thing? You know, the reason we do what we do is because we're both called to do it. Jesus said men's hearts failing them for looking for fear, for looking after those things coming upon the earth. People get upset when you talk about the days of Noah. They said, well, there's just violence. We're talking about violence that is carried down genetically. And even, I think a couple days ago, Doug, I don't know if you saw it, and Tom, maybe you saw it, but they've proven that nematode worms even have 14 generations of memory. So what we're finding is that we're now seeing, if you will, not only the gates of hell opening up, but the time that Daniel was told that knowledge would increase and run to and fro. We're seeing now the revelation. We're seeing God unveiling that which has been hidden for thousands of years, in which the occult and the Egyptian priesthood, by the Egyptian priesthood, I'm talking about the keepers of the secrets. All of these things we're dealing with bring together, or brought us together, in the desert southwest, as well as the islands of Sardinia, the islands of Malta, the islands all through the Aegean, even into North America, which again is called Amaruca, the land of the plumed serpent. So this is probably the most complete and concise pre-flood and post-flood presentation of why myths, legends, and all of even the church fathers referred to this time period, and why it's critical for everyone to understand, because there's going to be a compelling series of events that's coming on the scene, and it's going to cause people to doubt their faith, to doubt the Word of God, and an entire contra-Genesis position is going to be put forth for people to believe in all the artifacts which the secret societies and the power brokers deal with on the black market and draw occult powers from. That's their words, not mine. They're going to be brought forth, and they're going to lay out a compelling series of artifacts, evidence, and new findings, just like what's going on in the Antarctic. And by the way, you know when you've got all the heads of the intelligence agencies, the primary intelligence agencies, meeting in New Zealand, and they could basically go someplace in the mountains of Colorado, you've got to ask yourself why. So with no further ado, I'll turn it over to Tom, and we're really excited, ladies and gentlemen. The Lost World of the Cloud Eaters, we'll deal with the other issues that we're going to be talking about, but right now we're going to focus on the book for this first hour, and then the second hour we'll focus on the DVD slash the book, and then the third hour we'll tell people why the conference in Branson, Missouri in September is unlike any other conference. It's because our focus is singular and is bringing together, in my opinion, some of the most detailed researchers and well-written and well-placed research that's ever been undertaken. And it's like, in my opinion, God has raised up these men who will be in Branson for such a time as this. Go ahead, Tom. Welcome.
Hey, so good to be on the radio again with Doug and Joe and Steve Quayle, and thanks for having me on the program with you. Without doubt, this is the biggest thing we've ever done. And, you know, a lot of people think, Steve, that you and I have written numerous books together. And actually, we never have published a book together. This is the very first time we've ever done it. And it really was just a series of events from, you know, a former spokesperson for the Smithsonian and a 20-year museum curator by the name of Michael Herring, me just having almost an accidental meeting with him, and then, you know, you and me and him corresponding between the three of us, and the doors that he opened for us to meet with the tribal elders. By the way, these are the leaders of the tribes, not Johnny Come Lately. These are absolutely the governors of the nations, which among the Hopi, the Zuni, this just does not happen. They're very suspicious of white people. So for us to get the opportunity, and then the stuff that they revealed, which we'll get into some of this tonight, but I mean, it was so amazing, so groundbreaking. I mean, you know, one of the first things for me, Steve, that was eye-opening was how we learned from Michael Herring and then from the tribal elders that we met secretly with for a week this last year, how there are secret societies among the tribes. You mentioned secret societies a moment ago, and you and me both would mostly mean by that things like the Freemasons and whatever. I did not know that there are secret societies among the Indian tribes, and when Michael Herring first brought that up, and he said, yeah, think of it as an Illuminati among the Native American nations, compare it to the Freemasons. And then, when we started learning about it, we learned through him and the tribal leaders that one of the secret societies is called the Giants Society, and these are the people, some of whom were at that table with us, including medicine men that, well, they claim to communicate with and bring up the spirits of the giants. One of the men that was with us there that day, his wife talked that very day about bringing up one of the giants and visiting with it. Some spooky stuff, right? But they also claim that they protect the giant remains, the skeletons, the bones, the technology that belong to them, including the ancient Stargate, which they roughly described to us where it's at, and I'm hoping we're going to have a follow-up excursion to that location. Angelic technology, basically, in a secret place that was roughly described to us and that I'm not going to go into, but I do think you go into it in the documentary film, part of your documentary. And then, of course, the book, Unearthing the Lost World of the Cloud Eaters, which is 505 pages, as you say, and you wrote 250 pages. The whole, for the listener out there, when you get this book, the whole first section is dealing with pre-flood, even pre-Adamic creation, technology of the angelic world. And so Steve does 250 pages of fascinating research, and then I pick it up from there and talk about from Genesis 6 and forward, as well as what we learned here among the Pueblo tribes in the Four Corners area of the United States this last year, and then compare that to what we know from biblical chronology and history. And anyway, what a gigantic, gigantic project. And it wasn't just me and Steve Quayle. For the listener, you should know that Steve had an entire team of investigators. I had an entire team of investigators. We're talking about carloads of people. People flying in with helicopters into the Four Corners area of the United States, spending a week with the tribal elders. It's such a gigantic project. But we also literally did uncover previously undisclosed and unpublished information about the lost world of the Cloud Eaters, and that's what the documentary film and the book reveals. In fact, it's such a big project that Steve decided that we literally have to have a conference in September, and later on Steve will tell you about that. Anselm P. Rambla, L.A. Marzulli, Timothy Alberino, Dr. Michael Lick, Dr. Langford, Derek Gilbert, all these people going to be in Branson, Missouri. And when Steve gives you the information about that, you're going to want to check into it really quickly, because Gordon MacDonald, who used to organize the Strategic Perspectives Conference for Chuck Misler, my friend, after Chuck Misler retired, Gordon left that organization, and he's now working for Steve Quayle on this project. And he's been telling us that the sales are more than brisk. In fact, we know that with this being the very first radio show that we've done mentioning this conference, nothing else, just a couple of Facebook posts and things like that, it's already half sold out. And the venue, which is the mansion, the beautiful mansion theater in Branson, Missouri, can hold 3,000 people, and we know it's going to completely sell out before the event. So this is going to be something that you're not going to want to miss. And we're talking right now with Jim Baker about maybe also co-sponsoring that and having some programs filmed on the Jim Baker Show, so that people who are at this conference can go the day after over to Morningside and be part of the live audience over there. So anyway, giant, giant, humongous project. But I couldn't be more excited. I mean, Steve, I could have hardly imagined this last year when I packed up my off-road vehicle and we ventured into the Four Corner area of the United States, how much that trip was going to pay off, or the doors that were going to be open and the unanswered questions that were going to be raised. But the bottom line is, when all was said and done, my crew, your crew, we got answers that is going to demand that the history of America be rewritten. I mean, you won't be able to face this evidence and still believe that America at one time, you know, before Christopher Columbus landing at San Salvador Island in 1492, that America had been hermeneutically sealed off from the rest of the world. You're going to learn that that absolutely is untrue. There is a significant evidence, both pictorial, textual, and otherwise, to the contrary. Diffusionism that does already and is going to confront scientific orthodoxy. And as a matter of fact, we may even get to sit down with the Smithsonian that's interested in some of this information. The bottom line is, there's archaeological sites, artifacts, photographic evidence, all of it that suggests several things. Number one, that numerous pre-Columbian seafarers traversed the Atlantic Ocean and interacted with early Native Americans. Number two, that architecture here in the United States compares to pre-flood megalithic structures worldwide and testifies of a time when angels ruled on Earth. And then thirdly, that the giant offspring of these watchers were cannibalistic dragon worshippers that spread across the Earth like a locust plague, desecrating everything in their path, including winding up here in what we today call the United States of America. And that is not just our opinion. What you'll find in the book Unearthing the Lost World of the Cloud Eaters is how we met with indigenous leaders from several of the Pueblo tribes and how they preserve in their oldest stories we would call them legends, but they correspond with biblical chronology, including this sudden violent incursion by giants worldwide, which of course was central to our research. For example, the Apache told me of the legend that they have. It goes back to their earliest history of these Indians. They called them the Tartums, but they once lived. They were peaceful farmers. They were in the area of Mount Graham, actually, in Arizona, which we covered a lot of that in some of the works I did with Chris Putnam. And by the way, if there are people listening to this program that don't know this, Chris Putnam passed away at 51 years of age just a couple of months ago. And so Chris is gone, but he leaves behind the research and work that he produced that we believe will continue to minister to people for a long time. Him and I went to Mount Graham. That's why I raised his name. But they tell the story of the Indians that lived in that area and how all of a sudden, at the same time, by the way, that Moses on the other side of the world is writing in the Pentateuch, there were giants on the earth in those days. Here in the Americas, what they call the Jindupids, they describe these things as Goliaths. They're so big they use tree limbs for toothpicks, and they're led by this massive humanoid type thing called Evilkin, who allegedly came from the area around the Gulf of Baja. But those giants were wiping out the Tartans, so they ran, they hide themselves on the ground in the mountains, they cry out to the great creator God, and he sends a flood that covers the earth. And their story around this matches the biblical narrative and was recorded at the same time as the biblical narrative. So a minute ago, Steve, when you said some people ask why we talk about this kind of stuff, it's because it supports scripture. It collaborates, if you will, that these global events that are talked about in the Bible are not myth. They did happen, and people in cultures around the world in their own way recorded those events as happening right when the Bible says that they did, including the fact that the flood was sent because giant marauders were terrorizing and cannibalizing people around the world. And so some of the way that the American Indians tell the story is it's translated according to their world view, and so we would think of those parts of it as mythological, but for the most part, it's remarkably thematic, if you will, coherent with the Bible's book of Genesis, chapter 6. The Apache creation myth is interesting in another regard as well, which we learned about, in that a particular version of it talks about the one who lives above, who descends down over the mountain in a flying disc at the start of creation, in the beginning, when nothing existed. And this creator, riding upon this heavenly disc, as they describe it, sounds literally like it's taken out of the Bible, where it describes God in the same kind of language. There's a dragon with the power of speech who beguiles mankind, teaching them to use their kivas, their underground rooms where their prayers and rituals were made, to practice witchcraft and sorcery, what the Bible calls pharmakia, the effort to use mind-expanding drugs to put yourself in contact with those who are on the other side of the gateway, and how this played a role in the opening of supernatural gateways in pre-Columbian American history, through which the giants came and terrorized the early Americans. So now Michael Herring, who I mentioned briefly a moment ago, He was an American Indian Museum curator for over 20 years, and that's how he was also, when he was also an indigenous art PhD for the Smithsonian and gave lectures at the Smithsonian for many, many years on that subject matter. And he's probably listening to this program tonight, and if he is, hi, Mike, and kiss your beautiful wife for us. But through him, we were able to get a private, week-long secret meeting toward the end of last year with the leaders of the nation. And the one you mentioned a moment ago, Mahudi, again, no Johnny come lately. He was the head of tribal affairs to the United States government for decades. And he's in your documentary film talking about things. In fact, I thought it was funny because part of when you're filming him, the other native tribal leaders are sitting there and their eyes are wide because he's giving up secret, private information that's not supposed to be shared outside of the tribe. And he looks right at the camera and says, you know, I'm old enough, I've been around long enough, what are they going to do, kill me? I'm just going to talk about this stuff. And some of the stuff he gives up is unbelievable, which I'm not going to talk about because I don't want to ruin the content of the documentary film. So I'm only going to hint at that and what's in the book and so on about the cloud eaters. And what has until now been very highly guarded Native American information regarding locations, stargates, the bones of giants, and so on. So anyway, Steve, what a blast, man. I mean, how crazy is it that all of these doors opened up in a short period of time, and I drove into the Valley of the Gods while you and Timothy and your team are flying in a gigantic helicopter, and we got some great footage of that event.
Well, I think that what's important for people to understand, we have to cover and had to cover a vast amount of space to basically trace the total, if you will, migration and what caused a migration of the Anasazi. Now, I want to share something, too. When we were talking about all this stuff, the question that kept coming up, Tom would look at me across the big table we're all seated at and probably see me ready to jump out of my skin, because what was interesting to me is with the history that the Native Americans possess of the giants eating their people, they still venerate them. And they told us, and this is something that people need to understand, that now, in contemporary time, this isn't old stuff. The giant societies get together at periodic times and open the gates, and the giants tell them they're coming back. Now, why they can't come through yet, I don't know. It's probably to do with God's timing. But what we were able to do is basically place and put together a thread of history that, quite candidly, the official narrative has always tried to avoid. There are specific proteins found in the scat of animals and humans that indicate that cannibalism, when you eat human flesh, only specific proteins can be tagged, identified, and analyzed that would be indicative to flesh eaters. Now, here's what's interesting. Most people have got to understand this. We're talking about the gates of hell opening, and both the Phoenicians and the Carthaginians practice ritual sacrifice of children and pretty much infants. Now, this wasn't infanticide. This was absolutely a ritualistic slaughter of children. And what we're seeing in some of the leaks from WikiLeaks, and Doug, you'll find this interesting, the very same appetite for the blood of children is now present in the headlines of today. It doesn't matter if mainstream media will cover or not. As I've declared since I've been on talk radio, some people get offended, but mainstream media is nothing more than vomit brokers, and nobody wants to hang around vomit. As a matter of fact, it stinketh. So when we're talking about human sacrifice, when we're talking about the desert Southwest, when we're talking about and go to the areas of Sardinia and Malta, and the Sardinians is called the Island of Giants. Now, let me explain something. One of the criticisms that's always leveled were, where are these bones of giants? I just want to have one picture. There are 149 million non-documented, out-of-place artifacts that don't fit the historic narrative. There are, what, Tom, 14 500-yard buildings, 500-yard buildings, two and three floors high. And when we got that information, it was like everything started to click. Now, I want to read something. This just came to me a couple days ago, and I want to thank the gentleman. I won't, Tobias, I won't tell any more than that, but he said this. Steve, I'm a resident of Vero Beach, Florida, home of Rick Wiles, True News. The Smithsonian just started a dig here in town between the health department and airport. They claim to my mother they are looking for pre-human bones. They claim to have bones that have a mixture of animal and human DNA. I want to say that again. They claim to have bones that have a mixture of animal and human DNA. Those would be called, ladies and gentlemen, chimeras. When asked if they were talking about giants and Nephilim, they said there are no such thing as giants and clammed up very nervously. Well, you know, here you've got it. And the whole Florida Isthmus, the entire area around the Gulf Coast, is riddled with giants. It's riddled with bones. And so it evidently, here's what's happening. As the storms come, just as floods come, a lot of the bones are being revealed. And what's going to happen? You mark my words, everyone listening to this program. There are going to be simultaneous finds announced that will not be able to be covered up by the U.S. government as more and more countries turn against it. And when people see that everything they've been told in history, taught in history, is pretty much a lie. And here's the other question I want to answer right off of the top of this discussion. The reason why giants is a taboo is because it goes back to Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. And the sons of God saw that the daughters of earth were fair. It's interesting. I think, Tom, you said this, and it really got me going in a whole different train of thought. It was that the angels wanted to insert themselves into the human genome. They wanted to become human, and I'll be blunt, because of sex. And now we've got humans who want to become gods living for eternity. By the way, that's what angels possess, and the Bible teaches. It does not teach annihilation of the soul. It teaches that, you know, you reap for eternity what you sow on earth. So the reason for the cover-up, let me say this another time, the reason for the cover-up is because it bears witness to the truth of the Old Testament. There are 33, interesting number, how many degrees are there in masonry before you get into the super secret ones? 33 mentions of both Nephilim, translated giants, and Rephaim, or Rapha, translated the dead. And the Rephaim, okay, is very, very fascinating because, again, in one of the scriptures, I think it's in Isaiah, it says, shall the dead rise to praise thee? I've got so many scriptures going on in my head right now, if I don't mean to intentionally mislead. But that word dead is Rephaim. You know, here's another thing that most people have never put together, that in Ezekiel, the prophet, can these bones live? Well, you know, you can take that as meaning the nation of Israel came back and God's going to raise up, blah, you know, all of the promises that are associated with classic dispensationalism. But what a lot of people don't understand is that in the book of Joel, he calls forth his mighty army. They run on the walls. They basically leap over the walls. And that's not talking about a bunch of gymnasts from China. It's talking about a supernatural sized entities that are part of God's army in the last days. And you know, Tom, I think you and I spoke about this, maybe in your studio or at your home. It dawned on me, and I believe that was the Lord saying, take a look at this, Steve. The reason that the military is basically looking at the super soldier program, and by the way, it's going on all over the world. You can't even look at the front page of Drudge now without seeing human attenuation, human modification, Elon Musk talking about the brain. This is stuff that even the prehistory, before the Genesis 1-1 account of, or Genesis account of man being created in God's image and likeness in the book of Genesis, talks about technology. You see, Christians have always tried to compress time into 6,000 years. But again, I draw everyone's attention. By the way, if people want to read some great stuff written by one of the most brilliant researcher, authors, ethnographers, archaeologists, anthropologists, Arthur Custance, you can go to custance.org. And look at his Without Form and Void, Custance, CUSTANCE.org. So this is critical because it deals with the time before, or let's call it the times that the Illuminists, the priesthood, has chosen to keep all of the references to that period pretty well locked up. So, ladies and gentlemen, when we were concurrently putting together True Legends, the third DVD called The Holocaust of Giants, we originally started out with the title There Were Giants, but The Holocaust of Giants, the more that Tom investigated, the more that he went in, and I'll let you talk about the Sand Canyon incident. And for the record, we saw direct intervention by shadow people and shadow government with one of the people that Michael Herring had set up to talk to us, because if this isn't a fair statement, Tom and I are on camera, which you'll see in the DVD, talking about it, and boy, were some of the people in the National Park Service upset because it didn't fit at Mesa Verde their common reason why the ruins there were abandoned. So, Tom, isn't it interesting that in all of your research, the Sand Canyon incident, now, was a curator of that whole find and the grisly, if you will, dismemberment and cannibalism of the Native Americans, that someone tipped them off not to talk to us? Go ahead,
well,
sir.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And by the way, people should know that I vetted Michael Herring, and I was able to find extensive documentation of his life and career as a curator, as a spokesman for the Smithsonian, as a PhD in American Indian art. Of course, the proof in the pudding for me and you, Steve, was the people that he got to sit down at the table with us, which we'd have never otherwise been able to meet with, but they'd been friends of his for many, many years. So when I pointed out the Sand Canyon Pueblo dig, which had turned up very large Anasazi bone remains, gigantism, double row teeth, polydactyly, they had six fingers, six toes, these mutations that they dug up out of Sand Canyon Pueblo, and the report, of course, was published on one of the Colorado University web pages, and I had read it and pointed it out to him. He got a hold of the people. They knew him. They knew him from years ago. By the way, there's even books written by him that were published by the Smithsonian that are at Amazon. But he set it up for us to meet with the people that had dug up those bones, and the bones, of course, were repatriated, which is a law that was passed in the 1970s, where you have to surrender the bones back to the nations, and then they're supposed to take those bones and rebury them. But they had the photographic evidence, all of the details about the double row teeth, all that, which is in the report. And by the way, I can send that report to somebody if they want to email me. They can read the university's report on it. But we wanted to know about these unusually large mutations that they had dug up that were the remains of ancient Anasazi. So they agreed that they were going to meet with Steve and I and our team, our research team. And then all of a sudden, man, I don't know who said what to who, but all of a sudden they pulled out and said, no, thank you, don't call us no more, don't talk to us no more, don't anything. Tonight, I think we should disclose to the listeners some of the breakthrough information that we nevertheless uncovered on the topic of cannibalism, because there was the evidence of cannibalism there at Sand Canyon, too, and the ancient secrets of giants' resurrection and this key connection to what happened to the Anasazi. So we'll get into that in a moment, because you raised the whole issue of cannibalism a couple of times. But also, Steve, because you mentioned the Smithsonian storage buildings, I have a request in right now through Michael Herring to meet with one or more of his old Smithsonian curator friends that are still working today at the Smithsonian, to ask, straightforward, let them answer any way they want, is there any truth to the conspiracy theory that their museums, their research centers that are administrated by the government of the United States, are hiding, concealing the bones of other spectacular giants that were removed from burial mounds in our nation's earliest history. Now, we're working right now to set up that interview, and there is a chance that we are going to get it. In fact, I'll read you just a clip out of Michael's latest email to me. Very promising. He writes this. He says, "Tom, I finally was able to make contact with one of my Smithsonian friends, Dr. Bruce." Now, by the way, he gives his last name, but I'm going to withhold it right now for Dr. Bruce's own privacy. I was able to talk to Dr. Bruce yesterday. He was one of the initial directors of the Museum Support Center, one of the Smithsonian's vast state-of-the-art warehouses, the size of 5 football fields and 2 and 3 storages high. They have 14 of these throughout Maryland and Virginia, which house more than 149 million objects. He could give us a lot of great background information, but most importantly, and I get what he says here in this email, most importantly, he just gave us a green light with regards to a philosophical approach to other Smithsonian staff that I know who might prove most interested in helping us to try and locate the giant bones. Bruce believes that scientific anomalies that could not be made sense of, like the giant bones, were stored away in these warehouses. He believes that searching the collections now for the bones of the giants is a valid investigation. We just need to talk to the right people. I hope to speak to 2 current senior Smithsonian staff members tomorrow, end quote. So you can imagine how excited I am to know that there really is a good chance, either before we release our new book and documentary in 3 weeks from now, or right after that, that we may finally have the chance to get to the bottom of one of America's greatest mysteries and the role that the Smithsonian played, or continues to play, in regard to a cover-up. Now, for those that don't know what the great Smithsonian cover-up entails and how it's connected to the secret locations of giant bones, this is something that we deal with in great detail in the upcoming book, Unearthing the Lost World of the Cloud Eaters, including some of their own official reports that detail the giant remains of extraordinary size humans, their own reports from their own archives. So, again, this was information that I had heard talked about in conspiracy circles on the Internet and whatever for many, many years, but I had never actually seen or read evidence of what was dug up from underneath the burial mounds other than very old newspaper articles. But I had never seen the evidence supported by official documents of the Smithsonian Institution until we got into this research. We reproduced that stuff in the book, Unearthing the Lost World of the Cloud Eaters. And let me say something here early on. If a person clicks on the Hagman ad there that shows the copy of the book, or if you go to skywatchtv.com today, you'll see the video trailer up there talking about the documentary book. I mean, the book. We don't have the trailer yet. I'm waiting on that from Timothy Alberino and Steve Quayle. We don't yet have the trailer for the documentary film. I understand it's coming very soon. But the trailer for the book is up there. And then right below that, there's a little ad you can click on to pre-order. And if you pre-order the what we're calling the Cloud Eater Mega Deal, you get the book and the documentary film at a discounted price. But in addition to that, you get 2 more other books free. You get a 24-hour audio collection with me and Steve Quayle talking about everything him and I have researched over the last 10 years. You get that free. But also, on checkout in the store, and we're only doing this for the Hagman & Hagman program, if you type in the promo code, either in the comment section or where it asks you for the code, if you type in Hagman-Enoch, I'm going to have the warehouse also include the brand-new hardback collector's edition of the Book of Enoch, which has the first-ever narrative about how the giant cloud eaters arrived on Earth. So it's like over $200 worth of stuff we're going to give you for free if you pre-order over there. So Just be aware of that. Also, sometime tonight, if we possibly could, I'd like to talk about, is there something that we can do to cause people to send in a donation to Hagman & Hagman? Because I got to tell you, folks, you're listening to this program. The Hagmans don't ever beg for money. In fact, I'm probably embarrassing Doug by even bringing this up. These guys work their butt off. They never stop. They're willing to interview the most, cutting-edge people that the mass media, the fake news, as Donald Trump calls it, won't touch with a 10-foot pole. The people that try to control the narrative, like, in the old days, the doctrine of John Wesley Powell and the cover-up of the Smithsonian, where you have people like the Hagman & Hagman. They do this every day. They spend all their time. I think we should try to, I don't know. I don't really know what I'm saying because I'm kind of making this up as I go. But every time I'm on this program, I always think, man, it would be great if we could do something also for the Hagman.
You're very kind, Tom. Thank you so much. And it's not necessary. God bless you. Thank you. And you know what? Your presence, your investigative work product, it's a blessing to our audience, yours and Steve's. So thank you.
Hey, Doug, one of the things I think is critical for people to understand, too, is that what we're seeing right now throughout the mainstream news media, what we're seeing on the alien disclosure, as a matter of fact, Tom, it was pretty interesting because, you know, Cliff Mahoody, who basically rattled everyone's cages, and God bless you, Cliff, I mean, seriously, he has an alien bolo tie. And you'll see that. And what was interesting after, now listen, after we were pulling out of Mesa Verde and having to go some other places and film, one of the Native American elders came up and said, oh, by the way, I was abducted. And I looked at him and I said, by aliens? He said, yes. You cannot separate the Native American legends from the sky people. And when you hear that we're going to be seeing, at the mouth of Jesus, that we're going to be seeing things that men's hearts will fail them, but you're also going to see the scripture, the epistle saying that, you know, we're going to be bewildered with lying signs and wonders, all of Hollywood, in my opinion, now listen, I know we got guys listening to the show that are directors, people who have worked in Hollywood, with few exceptions, maybe 5%, everybody in Hollywood is compromised, and they worship literally the God of forces, just like the book of Daniel declares, and they worship the author of forces. So right now, while Tom and I are on all these different, if you will, parallel research highways, God is opening up, and I mean this, God is opening up to us favor with different people. We want to thank each and every one of you that buys our books and buys our DVDs. The DVD, you know, is going to be astonishing. Now, just for the record, these things are having an effect around the world, and they're having an effect because people are saying, I now get it. They used to say, I used to think God was cruel because he told children of Israel, go in and wipe out every man, woman, and child, until they found out those weren't normal people. Those were hybrids. That's why God told the children of Israel, don't marry the people in the lands around you, because they were already genetically polluted. And what is the biggest field right now? Now I'm getting a little bit off, but here's the deal. If I told you there were studies done on genetics of the Apache and of different people that were basically claiming that the men in long ships came and built the great monuments in the Valley of the Gods, that this was even before the time of the Pueblo Indians, talking about the times, what in Australia they call dream time, and what I call the time before Genesis 1, 1, 2, something caused a cataclysmic judgment on the earth. And cataclysm is the order of the day. Every time you look at anybody who's reporting on all the anomalies, whether it's the strange sounds, the strange weather, things that have never been seen before, you cannot get away from the fact that the times they are a-changing. And what we're watching now and what we're seeing, sometimes when we were in the desert southwest, our mouths would drop open. Now let me fast forward. Tim Alberino and the film crew, when they were in Sardinia, interviewed a half a dozen eyewitnesses. Some of these guys are in their 80s and 90s. And by the way, you know, they were speaking in Sardinian, which is a little bit different than Italian, so we had to hire translators. But it's clear, and you can understand it. And what people have got to recognize is this, is there's a whole generation of Sardinians that claim to be descended from the giants. Now, in the giant tombs, here's what most people don't understand. It's the same thing the Native Americans have been doing for centuries. It's not the tombs that the giants are in. The tombs are underground. The people would lay on top the surface and basically go into the Naragi towers to get and to channel the energy of the giants. And as most of you have heard me on Coast to Coast and on Doug Hagman and all the different shows, the giants, even their bones, possess an energy because they're supernatural. Their fathers were angels, their mothers were earth women, and people would say this, well, how can giants have sex with a normal-sized earth woman? It wasn't the giants. It was the fallen angels who can even take on whatever form or shape is necessary. And as Thomas said, genetically, they didn't just corrupt the angel. They corrupted everything that God saw was good in the book of Genesis forward. What are we seeing now? We're seeing, again, the bones of human and animal chimeras. I just read you that from a gentleman. By the way, that was dated, I think, 2 weeks ago. I read you the story of that. Now, I want to, hey, Tom, here's something that's mind-blowing. And I want to thank, and I'll just call P, because I don't want to use his name, and I'll just use it. Listen to this, okay? I think if you had to say something that God has just revealed, and this brother, I want to thank you personally for sharing that, is the fact that, and you'll love this, Eusebius, some people pronounce him Eusebius, but I just call him Eusebius. I was reading Preparatio Evangelica by Eusebius and came across a section that said that the giant Kronos, possibly Og, was held in stasis on an island near Britain. It also talks about the giant storms that appear when a giant is dug or megalithic site found. Now, this is from Book 5, Chapter 17. So then Philip had witnessed to his story and some of those who were present and had heard it from an aged Emilian. But Demetrius said that there were many desert islands scattered among those on the coast of Britain, some of which were named after demons and heroes, and that he himself, being sent by the emperor to make an investigation survey, sailed to the nearest of the desert islands, which had but few inhabitants, and these are all sacred persons, inviolable to the Britons. Very soon after his arrival, there arose a great commotion there, and many portents in the sky, and violent blasts of wind, and falling of thunderbolts. And when this abated, the islanders said that one of the higher powers had been extinguished, for as a lamp. They said, well, light, and listen to this, while lighted does no harm, but being extinguished is hurtful to many. So great souls are benignant and benignant and harmless in their shining. Now listen to this. However, one island, which is called Kronos, there was, however, one island there in which Kronos was confined and guarded in sleep, Barbarius, for his sleep had been artfully contrived to keep him bound, and there were many demons about him as attendants and servants. According to Talos, a first century Greek historian, Og is none other than Kronos. Both Og and Kronos were known as the leader of the Titans. So according to this, Og of Bashan is still alive in stasis somewhere near Britain, if he has not been moved. The city of London, the financial center of the world, celebrates two giants, Gog and Magog. Once a year, they bring them out. They have giant, if you will, puppets, marionettes with no strings attached. I don't know any other way to describe them. Look up city of London, Gog and Magog. So what's fascinating, Tom, is right now that stasis word is the same word that multiple generals and special operations have used, that Dr. Ernst Moldeshev has used when he was taken to the caves of Tibet and shown a sleeping giant. The commonality of this. Now, we're talking Eusebius. We're talking a long time ago. The word stasis is absolutely now a foundational principle of understanding how these giants are in a slumber. And when they awake, they will have no knowledge of the time that has been taken from them. Their natures will be the same. And as you've quoted before, go ahead and quote, Isaiah 13?
Yeah, Isaiah 13, open the gates, ye ruler, I give command, and I bring them. Giants are coming to fulfill my wrath.
So, given this information, by the way, until P gave this to me, again, thank you, brother, I did not know this. You know, here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, we do the best we can. We do it with the budgets we have, with the people we have, and by the grace of God, he always makes up the difference. I've talked to different people about underwriting, you know, some of these projects. I don't think people get it, Tom, and look, here's what I'm saying. We're on to the biggest news in history. I told one gentleman, I said, look, you're not going to just be, quote, famous, but you're going to be used by God to basically bring the biggest news to the planet, which will point people to Jesus Christ. Look, Tom, you have been a pastor in the Assembly of God. I grew up in the Assembly of God. I thank God for, you know, the stuff that was good and the teaching and the full gospel and stuff, but also you got led out of there. I got led out of there. And what's interesting, ladies and gentlemen, and this is just a word of encouragement to everybody, you don't need to copy someone else's ministry. You can seek the Lord and he'll plug you in. And if the 139th Psalm says that more numerous in the sand, than the sand of the sea, so are God's thoughts towards you, then, you know, people who are praying that want to get involved, I'm sure, Tom, you want people, or people email you, or, you know, the ones you see wanting to come alongside. Well, here's the deal. You've got to be called to this. And I know people, and I'm just saying this for the sake of those who really want to get involved in this. Become an expert in the field that you are the most interested in, and then ask God to grant you favor with those who can utilize your expertise. Because I'll share this, and then I'll turn it over to you. How long do
and
we
Steve,
have, Doug?
We're right up against the break right now, so this will
okay.
Be
well, let's
a
wait until
to...
after you get back.
Excellent. Folks, you're listening to Steve Quayle from stevequayle.com and Tom Horn. Fantastic show so far. They're going to be with us until the end of the program, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Steve and Tom after these short messages.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right? You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available, anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greenovative.com. That's greenovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. A Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's small, smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can. For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.